Hey everyone, Star Master Jeff here, and welcome back to the Star Master Log. Today we're discussing the fourth part of the Sibylline arc, Powering the Nautilus Spiral. In this episode, the crew faces off against two of the greatest challenges a party can possibly face in a tabletop role-playing game. A puzzle, and a short climb down a shaft. We're going to be breaking down this episode in just a moment, but first, let's check in with the crew and hear their latest encrypted reports. I'll see you on the other side.
Update since the last log, I do not have any desire for self-replicating sparring partner. And I know punching through a vat because it seems too complicated for what it is a bit one-note. But I've been on many missions that have been helped by using physicality to make an impact on structural obstacles, like apertures. Honestly, this is starting to feel more like a classic Robert and Haley mission, rappelling down into the unknown, finding and making our own exits. Thankfully, Felix and Voss seem to have the more alien aspects of the mission figured out. And if I can speed that up with what I do best, everyone will see it as a win-win, right? I'm gonna wait to answer that, though, until I can write up a full mission report once we're all out of here.
You know, I thought I knew pretty much everything there was to know about computers, programming, science, machines, but boy, this alien facility sure has proved me wrong. Kind of into it. You know, it's been a long time since I've been stumped by anything like this, where I've just been completely in the dark. And it's exciting. Like, the possibilities are exciting. Because, yeah, I've been down here controlling these things, moving them around, interfacing with them, but I don't know how it's working. Like, I don't know how I'm moving these walls around. Is it some kind of electrical signal between the nanofluid and the walls? Is it some kind of wireless interface? Is there maybe a physical interaction happening? The walls are also made of this nanofluid? I don't know. I don't know, but I'm excited. The possibilities are endless, and especially thinking about cracking this, figuring out how it's working and applying it to our technology, unleashing something. I mean, oh, Thorne might not like that word. Bringing something like this to the galaxy. The technology, the advances we can make, it's beyond imagination, and I have a pretty wild imagination. Okay, calm down, Felix, because first things first, we have to get out of here. All right? We're almost there. We're getting close. I feel it, but we've got to push through to the end. Get out of here, get to the goat, and sit down and do some real nice science.
Oh, this place is ridiculous. There's so much crazy, unexplainable nonsense in every room that I'm starting to get desensitized to all of it. I just hope that when all this is through, we have enough to turn a significant profit on this little adventure of ours. Poor Froggy's losing it. When we first came in, it felt like him and Vera were keeping us calm. But now that we're delving deeper and deeper, he's starting to crack. We gotta keep everyone together, keep everyone sane, keep everyone in check. Sure, it's pretty dangerous down here, but I get the feeling we'll find a way out soon. We just have to survive all these crazy security spider droids or whatever the hell they are. Vera, Felix, and Voss can hardly contain themselves. I mean, I get it. This place is like a once-in-a-lifetime discovery after once-in-a-lifetime discovery in every single room we explore. But something's nagging at me. That fork we found, I can tell it's eating at Haley. Robert makes it clear that the damn thing creeps him out. I mean, me too. But with Haley, I feel something more. It's almost like there's something that she's not telling us.
I'm getting real tired of Froggy freezing up. I mean, we all get scared. You don't think I'm scared? I'm always scared. That's baseline. Letting fear run point, that's what gets people killed. One bad decision, one hesitation, this whole op's blown. Could have gone sideways. Whole team could have been dead. And the team comes first. Always. And you know I wasn't touching them bun cakes. Wasn't going towards them ghoul pools either. Mm-mm. Or rappelling down a hole into the unknown. Oh, yes, sir. Hoorah. That's it. Froggy's lucky I didn't turn him into Haley's landing pad. At least then he would have been useful. Haley, Felix, swimming in the goo sludge. Thorn and I, we kept our boots clean. Now wouldn't you know it, there's another Cthulhu tuning fork lighting up like it's alive. Oh hell no. Funny how that works. But from here on out, I'm keeping a real close eye on Haley. I know what to do. Now, we got some whirligig chainsaw med bot slicing and dicing away. Well, time to lock and load, brother. No chance this was ever a medical facility. Feels more like into the penal colony to me. Get ready, boys. Buckle up, giddy up.
So that was the crew's take on this episode, but let's take a step back and talk about what happened behind the screen. This is Star Master Jeff, and you're listening to the Star Master Log. Let's talk about how that session went for me, your good old local Star Master. We'll talk about what was planned, what I found surprising, and how much I'm improvising what you hear. If you're into GMing, world building, or just curious about how that story takes shape, this segment is for you. So, right off the bat, I'd like to address the elephant in the room. My players are not at all immune to the common, let's call them foibles, of every other gaming group since the existence of TTRPGs. What I mean by that is, of course, the goo shaft. I think that whether a group is crossing a 10-foot gap, trying to get across a river, climbing up or down a wall, or goo shaft, players cannot help but deliberate endlessly on how to best approach an environmental traversal. I expected them to talk through the best way to proceed down this 30-foot shaft, which I made slippery because it used to have goo in it. I thought this would be a slight challenge. In all honesty, this could be quite dangerous. A 30-foot drop is quite deadly, especially considering how slippery it is. I was also prepared to ask for all manner of exert-based checks. However, I wasn't prepared for, but probably should have been, the endless dickering of how best to approach this relatively short climb down a slippery wall. I mean, my God, I've been playing TTRPGs for 30 years. When I was 10 years old, people were doing this same thing. And now that we're all 40 or approaching 40, it's still happening. If you're a player out there, I implore you, just tie a rope to something and climb down the wall. It doesn't have to be a big deal. This group routinely faces down death. Most recently, Felix swam in a nanite pool. I mean, outside of trying to figure out their 10-tug system, that went pretty smoothly. And then this is what gives them pause. They just killed a self-replicating squid crab, and this is what stops them in their tracks. First of all, I think it's important for everyone at home to know that I always aggressively edit these podcasts. I want a tight story. I want everything to be narratively important. I keep only in the relevant, most interesting, or hilarious bits. This may have been the most aggressive yet. In this segment alone, I must have cut at least 15 minutes out of players debating who should go first, how they should climb down, rope structures, knots, rule lookups, figuring out how his exertion works. And then when we finally figured it out and they were starting to climb down, Stephanie says, "Oh, I want to jump." "Why? Why do you want to jump, Stephanie?" "Oh, I want to save the rope." She wants to be able to untie the rope and keep it so that she has the rope for later. I mean, I admire her frugalness, but come on, folks, it's 30 feet. She's going to take massive damage jumping down there all to save some fiber. So enters phase two of the deliberations. How do we make that work? Rules as written, you're going to get hurt. Even with the lower gravity of sibling, you gotta take some damage, Steph. So then we start thinking, exert rules, saving throws, styles of landing, slowing down your descent like a monk by pressing against the tube walls and sliding all the way down to the bottom. In all seriousness, I cut at least half of that. It went on and on and on, and it was kind of fun at the time, but listening back on it, I was like, just get on with it. It's 30 feet, tie a rope and slide down, leave the rope behind. My God. But alas, In the end, she untied the rope, stowed it in her pack, and jumped. She went into free fall, failed her saving throw roll, which by the grace of me as a GM, I gave to her, and then she took damage. She tried to walk it off, put on a brave face, but she failed her perform roll as well. So not only did she get completely wrecked, if memory serves, she took 5 points of damage, which is not nothing when you're only second level, but she also didn't stick the landing, and everyone saw how badly she failed. But you know what? We love Haley. And this is what she's all about. She's not a planner, but she is a schemer. And if it's not Robert doing something dumb, it's Haley. Right? They are the heart and soul of this team, not by way of their brain, but by way of their heart. And she wanted to keep that rope, and she was willing to lose hit points to do it. And I don't know if I would call that admirable, but it's certainly entertaining. So Haley's made it down, along with the rest of the crew. And from here on out, the episode revolves around an intricate puzzle room, which was really my first exploration into that genre in this game. Man, I love puzzle games. More specifically, I love puzzle games where you solve in-universe puzzles that were never meant to really be puzzles in the story of the game. For instance, take Riven, one of the best puzzle games ever created, in my humble opinion. There are precious few puzzles in that game that were created by in-universe characters that are actually meant to be puzzles. Instead, most of the puzzles you are solving as the stranger, the main character of the game, are cultural. You are dropped into a strange place where your ignorance is the only barrier to free movement. A simple elevator is unfathomable to you because you do not understand the Riven numbering system. Children's books inform you of local wildlife, which later unlocks your ability to understand scientific notes, and so on and so forth. There are puzzles because you are a stranger in a strange land, not because those that live in that space were trying to make you think. Any child of Riven could easily navigate that world, but yet you, an adult, are at a standstill because you are not from here. Those are the type of puzzles that I grew up on, and those are the type of puzzles that I like to run. Puzzles as a cultural enigma to be unraveled. And after solving the intricacies of that puzzle, you are left with a greater sense of the world you are exploring. Historically, my games contain a lot of puzzles, but in the podcast, I've shied away from them because it's very difficult to describe a puzzle without visuals in a lot of cases. Usually, I would have a full map, reference photos, and I can really dig into what makes that puzzle tick without worrying about time. But in a podcast, we're strapped for time and we have audio only. And so I've really struggled to figure out the best way to present the types of puzzles that I like to have in the podcast. So this was my first attempt, and honestly, I do think I have a long way to go here. A few things I would change about my puzzle presentation in the future. One, I would give less detail up front. I sort of gave a lot of information about the puzzle right away, and I think that I would rather that they explore the area and I reveal one piece at a time. Two, I would strip out anything unnecessary from the area, or at least not mention it until the puzzle is solved. So in this particular case, they would explore the room, and as they explore it, I would give them the different pieces of the puzzle. You have the track on top, you have the vats, and the alien fork, and on and on. But I might even make it so that the bundt cake was in the same room, and the surgery room opens up after the fact. That way they don't need to actually explore that room, which 3/4 of it is not important to the puzzle, and I could just move the 25% that is important out to the main room. And number three, I just reduced the number of moving parts in the puzzle, just for time. I had the track, the vat, the nautilus spiral grooves, and the tuning fork, and the bundt cake, and then there was all their knowledge about the nanofluid and how mechanisms upstairs worked, and I think it was just probably a little too much, especially with the alien fork having a depression for Dr. Voss to sit into, etc., etc., etc. It's too much at once. So I think just with these three changes, I can make puzzling a bit more fun to interact with and listen to in the pod. And I'm already planning my next attempt. I seriously love crafting puzzles and can't wait to get to another one. So puzzling aside, what is this room? And what was it used for? The strange Nautilus room lays directly beneath the goo vats one floor up. Each goo vat on the upper floor has an aperture in the ceiling here that connects it to this floor. A network of tracks allows a container hung from the ceiling to slide under any of the apertures, open it, and receive the contents of the vat from the upper floor. At that point, the now full container can travel the tracks to the next room, where a larger vat is positioned between two surgical spider robots. The hanging container can dump its contents into the larger vat, and assumably the spider-like medical bots could get to work. A drain in the vat would then allow for the contents to be flushed out of the vat. So here's the short of it. The facility on the first floor houses vats, each of which contained an infected alien submerged in their own nanofluid, connecting them to their virtual reality exonet as they slowly died to the plague. Now, it would seem that it would sometimes be necessary to take one of these beings, transport them to the lower floor, and operate on them. This could have been to run experiments, perhaps in an attempt to cure the plague, or to give the patients routine care, or even to autopsy a deceased being, perhaps in service of studying the infection. Honestly, in all likelihood, it's probably all three. It's becoming clear that this disease was a major issue in this alien society, and the desperation of the alien race probably led them to perform all manner of what we would consider inhumane procedures in an attempt to stop it. So, moving on from the horrifying spiderbot medical procedure portion of the podcast, I'd like to take a question from a listener in a segment I like to call the Subspace Signals. This week's question comes from Killian, who sent it along via email. Our first one via email. Thank you, Killian. He asks, do you think that Talia genuinely wants to make things right with Thorn, or is she still playing an angle? Great question. Lovely question. So this is in direct reference to Thorn's focus episode, Nexus of Betrayal. Talia, for those playing along at home, is Thorn's mother and the former CEO of Draxus Goods. Because of Thorn's inexperience and innocence, he, I guess you could say, accidentally destroyed their company's credibility, leaving it open for cheap purchase by Veridine's subsidiary, Nexus Trading. The deal that Thorn got himself involved in was worse than anyone could have imagined and actually included multiple illegal sales that landed Thorn in jail for a decade. For years, Thorn believed he was framed by William Salarist, his business partner, and that belief has driven pretty much every decision he's made since getting out of prison. But in his focus episode, Nexus of Betrayal, we learned the truth. It was actually his mother, Talia, who planted the evidence that landed him in jail. She expected both Thorn and Salarist to go to jail, removing them both from the equation. She was protecting her company, and instead watched her one and only son take the full sentence while William Salarist walked away scot-free and bought Draxus Goods for next to nothing. So, in his focus episode, when she finally appears and she tells Thorn that she wants to help, that she spent 10 years trying to undo what she did, the question is, do you believe her? She clearly has resources, she has information, and she did engineer this whole meeting with Thorn and Mara to bring Thorn closer to the truth. But she also lied to him for a decade, and she's the reason that he was in prison. That's a very high cost for a lie, Thorn losing 10 years of his life. Personally, I think she means it, and I think that she wants to make things right with Thorn. But meaning it and being trustworthy aren't really the same thing now, are they? She's proven that she'll make huge, important, unilateral decisions that she thinks are for the greater good, even if they cripple the life of her son. And that's exactly the type of person who I think would burn you twice. If it comes down to Thorn and Talia regaining control of Draxus Goods, what do you think she's going to choose? I think you already know the answer. And there's your answer for this week. If you'd like to send in a signal for the next log, head on over to patreon.com/darkstaradventurecast. Our patrons always have priority in the queue, but I do also pay close attention to our socials, so drop us a line on Blue Sky or just send us an email, and your question might just be the next one we intercept. So that wraps up our subspace signals for the week, but before we close out the log, I want to leave you with a Star Master spec, a book, movie, or other piece of media that helped to inspire this week's episode. So I know I just spent a lot of time talking about Riven, how the best puzzles aren't really puzzles at all, just a world that doesn't explain itself to you. And if that philosophy resonates with you the way that it does with me, Quern, Q-U-E-R-N, is the next game that you should play. It's a first-person puzzle adventure in the tradition of Myst and Riven. You wake up in a strange, abandoned world with no instructions, no hand-holding. What's left behind are the remnants of a civilization, machinery, journals, architecture. And from there, you piece together how things work, not because someone designed a puzzle for you, but because you're a stranger in a strange place that was built for someone else. The production is remarkable for an indie game. The environments are dense and full of atmosphere. The logic is internally consistent, which, honestly, I'm pretty unforgiving on. If I start a puzzle game up and the logic doesn't follow from one puzzle to the next, I'm out. And in Quern, when things click into place, it feels so earned in a way that most puzzle games don't manage. You're not shuffling from abstract puzzle to abstract puzzle. Instead, you're connecting a larger picture together where each puzzle builds on the previous one. It's the kind of game that I have found myself thinking about long after I put it down, which is, for me, the highest compliment that I can give to anything. I cannot wait to play it again, but I can't until I've forgotten about it. It's been years now, and I'm almost at the point where I've forgotten enough about the puzzle structure that I can go back and play it again. And if I do, I'll make sure I let you know how it goes. So if you liked what the crew found on Sibylline at Xenosite 34B, a dead civilization's infrastructure built for minds that aren't theirs, just waiting to be understood, then Quern is for you. It captures that feeling better than almost anything else that I've played. Highly, highly recommended. Oh, and the soundtrack is pretty baller too. Check it out on Spotify. On the next episode of the Dark Star Adventure Cast, the alien fork comes to life. A window opens, and through the dark between the stars, something looks back at the crew. A scream from Haley, followed by silence. And finally, Robert starts telling a story that people actually want to hear. All this and more on the next episode of the Dark Star Adventure Cast. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one. If you're enjoying the show and want to dive deeper into the lore, please check out our Patreon. You'll get ad-free, early access to every episode, plus a whole bunch of bonus content, including the Star Master logs, where I personally break down how the campaign's put together, what I'm planning, what I'm improvising, and what secrets are still waiting in the dark. You'll also get Haley's notes ripped straight from her old-school analog notebook, as well as exclusive character insights, behind-the-scenes glimpses you won't hear in the main show, and much more. Support the mission at patreon.com/darkstaradventurecast. And as always, thanks for listening, and keep following that signal.